Previously on ArtCast, Jason Lock.
Security is a good thing.
Ron Jacobs.
Interesting is always better.
Fred Chung.
All right. Welcome back to ArtCast, where we feature today the second half of the Web Services Security Patterns Overview podcast. The blast from the past, from September 2005, but still quite relevant because this guide is now shipping, and it will educate your brain when it comes to web services security. So if you didn't hear the first half, go back and listen to that, and get ready for the second half with Jason Hogg, Fred Chung, and yours truly, talking web services security.
I don't know how many people in the audience have actually tried to use Wizzy and Kerberos. There's actually quite a lot you need to do, especially if you want to deploy Kerberos to a web farm, for example. So what we try to do is actually inside this implementation pattern where we've now bound to a specific product, we're now saying this is the implementation pattern for Wizzy 2. Within the next month or so, just as an FYI, we should have similar implementation patterns for Wizzy 3 for the people that are learning based on the beta version that's currently available on MSDN. So what we've got here is a little bit of background that talks about what's the difference between the Kerberos Token 2 and the Kerberos Token, because I think SP1 of Wizzy 2 included a new version of the Kerberos Token. We've then got a little bit of talking about, you know what, if you're actually, there's certain permissions that your host needs to have, especially if you're trying to use Windows 2000. So we've got a little bit of information in there. Then a high-level overview of the actual participants that you actually need to think about. And we sort of define them up front, because then within the actual text, you'll see that we refer them a little bit further. Then what we have, and we'll get into the code, don't worry about that, we have just a very high-level explanation of the steps that the requester, the client of the web service, needs to actually take. So there's this whole idea of authenticating the subject, retrieving a service ticket, signing the message, encrypting the message, and sending the message to the service. Five steps seem pretty simple. And then we actually talk about, we go into detail in each of these steps. So step one, if you're actually using a smart client application, the user's typically already logged on, so this step's already done for you. Then step two is actually where your service is actually talking to, or your client is actually talking to a particular service. So you've got to get a specific service ticket to allow you to actually talk to the remote service. Now what we've actually got in here is some code that's helps you actually get that Kerberos token that I was talking about. And then once you've got the Kerberos token, the next couple of steps are actually about signing and encrypting the message. And what we've actually tried to do is, rather than actually showing people how to use the APIs, we're actually giving showing people how to use security policy. So there's two different ways you can actually approach securing a message with Wizzy. You can use all of Wizzy 2's APIs, or you can use their implementation of WS security policy. Now, the advantage with using policy is that you actually specify how your security is enforced outside of your application logic. So what that means is, as you move to Wizzy 3, you're not necessarily going to have to spend any time updating your business logic. And when you move to Indigo, where the APIs are very different, you're not going to have to necessarily learn a whole new set of APIs and recompile your business logic. You'll just have to think about how you actually use Wizzy 3 and Indigo's security policy.
So you're actually trying to give us a little inside track to the right way to do this, not just going to tell us the way to do it, but that we've actually thought through and our friends on the Wizzy and Indigo teams have said, hey, you know, you probably ought to do it this way. So we're not leading people down some kind of dead-end path here.
No, that's right. One thing I should also mention, though, is that the security policy in Wizzy 2 is very different from security policy in Wizzy 3. In Wizzy 3, they've standardized around these sort of five or six standard bindings, which means the policy is actually much easier to use. In Wizzy 2, it was a lot more flexible in some ways, but at the same time, the learning curve was very steep, and debugging was actually sometimes difficult as well. But anyway, what I've got on the screen right now is actually what is called an integrity assertion. So an integrity assertion is, again, how we're actually specifying declaratively, i.e. in a configuration file rather than in code, how the message should be signed by the client before it actually gets sent to the service. And the good news with Wizzy is you don't have to type this stuff in. There's actually a tool in that actually allows you to generate this policy as well. So let's actually keep moving forward. So it's actually a second assertion that we're using. An assertion is, again, a way that within WSI's security policy, you describe what your requirements for securing a message are. We have this idea of a confidentiality assertion, which is, again, where we specify what token type we're using. So we're using a SAML token, it's a derived, you're using a derived key, all that sort of good stuff. And then we've got some claims, which is basically who the actual, what the account that the service is actually running in. So this is how we do mutual authentication. Basically, mutual authentication is where the client, not only does the service want to authenticate the client, but the client wants to make sure it's talking to the right service. So we've got that specified in claims, and we talk all about this in the contents. So, and then we also talk about what parts of the message we want encrypted. So right now it's the body that's encrypted. And then what we've got down here is obviously the send the message to the service. But really what we're doing here in policy is basically saying the request message uses this policy and the actual response message uses this policy. Anyway, sort of for the people that haven't used policy before, probably all over the place, but as far as my explanation of what's going on here. But one of the main things with this implementation pattern is that as a developer or an architect, hopefully what you can do is actually choose the group of patterns that this implements and then print off this paper, give it to your developers, and then they can literally just sit there and follow the steps here and they should be productive. They don't need to read the other 100 pages of content that we've got, for example.
Well, you know, so in our famous four tenets of service orientation, tenet number four says service compatibility is determined by policy. And so that was just kind of a way of saying that we think it makes sense to take these policy statements about how you want to sign and encrypt your messages and such and separate them from your code into something that's sort of external, that lives outside of your code, and then the infrastructure can read that and make it happen. I kind of picture this as like, I'm sending a package and I'm just like the developer. My business logic packages up the package, but I don't care how it gets there, right? I hand it to the delivery guy who has with some security instructions, like don't let anybody mess with this, you know, make sure it doesn't get tampered with, don't let anybody see it, you know, and then the security guy takes care of that. So the instructions are like the policy and the security guy is like in this case, the WSI infrastructure. But then see, what's beautiful about that is that later down the road, when I decide I want to change my delivery service, I can take the same instructions, give them to a different delivery service. They can do the same thing. So my code can evolve nicely as we go on out through the future, which is very cool. Okay, so love the CHM. Some people are already asking, how can I get this? And we're going to have the link for you at the end. But what else do you got to show us here, Jason?
You know what? So let's actually, we won't go into too much more detail, but basically you can now imagine that the service receives this message from the actual client. And then there's obviously five steps that the service needs to do. It needs to actually take some credentials out of the message. It needs to decrypt the message, verify the signature. And then basically at that point, it's authenticated the user. So at that point, it's in a position to authorize, was this person using this Kerberos ticket actually meant to call the service or not? And the great thing with Kerberos is you can actually use role-based authorization. So you can actually say, was this person a member of a role? And then actually even better, you can actually also impersonate and possibly delegate access to remote resources as well. So there's a lot of cool stuff that you can do here as well. We've also got the complete policy description in there. We've also got just one more thing that we've got here, which is important to note, is we've got these ideas of primers. So there's also a lot of peripheral content that we could have included for Kerberos. Things like, you know, drilling down into detail, how does the LSA work, SSPI, shared secrets, and a lot of gobbledygook that only Fred could ever explain to anyone, I'm sure.
So if you really want to impress people, you know, you go and read this and you come in and like, yeah, I'm a security dude like Fred, you know.
Exactly.
I know what that's all about.
But you know, the great thing with this primer is it's written intentionally because there are challenges such as using a domain account so that you can actually support using Kerberos in a web farm, which requires you to understand some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's not a typical scenario that a developer maybe working in a dev environment may have to consider, but definitely when you go to deploy, you'll need to understand some of this stuff. So that's why that material is there as well.
Well, what I love about this is the kind of thing that you see email on various message boards or email alias where someone's going like, help, how do I do this? You know, and we see this all the time, right? People are asking, and so this is great because now we can just point them to this. Okay, so is that it for this?
So that is it.
Okay.
So
And we said show code, so we did see a little bit of code, but we're going to see even more stuff a little bit later.
Yep.
Okay, so there are some other patterns that we could have applied, right, in this context?
Absolutely. So that scenario is really more about authentication, data confidentiality, and data integrity and so forth. There's also other best practices, such as making sure that you validate any input data because, as you mentioned, the tenets of SOA, the boundaries of a service are explicit. Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't trust any input data. Also, something like exception shielding. You shouldn't be returning any internal data, especially unintentionally, like exceptions may be prone to do. So we've got some other patterns that you may want to apply to that scenario as well.
Okay, excellent. Now, so here's the thing. It's like, great, scenarios are good, love the patterns, but, you know, it's hard to get people to do this stuff, you know. And I often say, you know, we've been in the business of writing books and writing pattern things, you know, and people have the best intentions, right? They'll get this stuff, and if this was in a book, they'd put it on their shelf, and it would collect dust like every other book they've got up there. So how are we going to make this even more powerful and helpful for the developers?
You know, that's a great question. It's something we've been thinking about. Great question. I'm glad you asked, Ron.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Something we've been thinking about for a little while, and we've actually just recently built a prototype using something called the Guidance Automation Toolkit, which is another deliverable from our team that's available on our team's homepage. And essentially what this is allowing us to do is think about how we can include the implementation patterns inside Visual Studio. So if you take something very simple or something that seems on the surface very simple, how to use direct authentication against a SQL database. So direct authentication is where you've got a client and a web service and you're using user ID and password to authenticate. It's definitely not a best practice, but there's definitely times that you do need to do it. So some of the key challenges are, how do I pass the user ID and password within the message? What WSI extensibility point should be leveraged? Because WSI out of the box supports direct authentication using Kerberos, but it doesn't support using a custom SQL database. Mm. But they've got extensibility points that you can take advantage of. How should your WSI security policy be generated? How should the message contents be protected on the wire? How should passwords be stored in the database? Because most importantly is if the database is ever stolen, and we've seen this in a couple of different cases recently as well, you want to make sure that the passwords within their database are protected so that other people can't impersonate because they now understand the passwords.
Oh, so you mean like when I go to the website and it says like they have that little link like forgot your password?
Uh-huh.
And then I click that and they say like, hey, we'll email you your password. I totally love that because email is obviously very secure.
All right, yeah,
and
sure.
And also that, you know, if they can send me my password, that means they know my password, right?
That's absolutely the worst practice possible.
Yeah, but I see it all the time, right?
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of naive implementation out there.
Okay, yeah. So
That begs the question, what's the right implementation and how do I get it right every time?
Yeah, well, of course, my rule is now, if your bank can email you your password, you ought to change banks. Okay, right. Okay, so let's see some more.
All right, so we're back on my desktop, and now what we're going to do is actually just switch to a virtual PC, because we're actually, this demo has been built on Visual Studio 2005.
Yeah, right, because the Guidance Automation Toolkit only works on Visual Studio 2005.
And what I should do...
And by the way, for our listeners, you can hit F5 to get a nice bigger view of this if you want to see the whole thing.
What was the resolution we're using?
Well, 1024 by 768 should be okay. I think that's what you were at. Yeah.
Okay, yep. So let's... okay, never mind. All right. So
better.
So Visual Studio, prior to doing the presentation, I've set up a sample web service. And I've called it, I think, the order pizza service.
Oh, I love those.
Because we're getting close to lunch. So what we can actually see, we've actually got this an interface, which is actually the service interface definition, if you will, for the web service. We've got the code that implements that. We've also implemented one of the patterns. And this is some of the tooling that I didn't show, but basically what we've built into the generation of this service code for the web service is the pattern that we've called exception shielding, which is how you actually protect against an internal exception being exposed to the client. But more importantly, how do I now go and implement that pattern that you described earlier? So this is where within Visual Studio and using GATT, we've now added this ability to right-click on the service and apply a security pattern.
And then what we can do is, based on the reading that you've already done, either through the CHM or the Word document, you can then select, you know what, we're doing direct authentication using a custom SQL database because the web service needs to authenticate against a database that already exists. And because, as we mentioned, we want to enforce hashing. I guess what we've got is the ability to actually choose not to hash, which, again, not a good practice. And this is a prototype, so some of these options we may remove in a later release. You can also choose to hash client-side or server-side. And what we're actually going to do is server-side. And then what we can do is actually choose protection level. So, again, this comes back to, and we haven't necessarily done a good job of tying this back to the data confidentiality or data origin authentication patterns, but that's what we should have in here. But we've got the ability to actually sign the message, so it's protected for data integrity, or sign and then encrypt. So not only is it protected against data integrity, it's also protected against unauthorized users getting access to the content. Or probably more importantly, what we can do is actually also encrypt the signature. And the reasons for doing that are sort of, it's to protect against what they call a brute force attack. That's described more on the pattern. But then what we're doing is, because we're using direct authentication, we're actually using a server certificate to actually encrypt the message. So what we need to do now is obviously select the right certificate. So what I'm doing is just selecting some certificates that we use in the WSI sample application that I'm also responsible for. We could also choose to implement other patterns such as message replay protection, but given that we haven't implemented that, I won't check that box.
Ah, okay.
This is just a prototype. So again, right now it knows we're actually authenticating against a database, so it's going to ask us which database we're authenticating against. My database is running, and let's select a database. Now, because it's a prototype, the last thing you want to do is test any of those places where you would normally expect to see exception handling. That's why I hesitated there. I checked, make sure the database is running. We're using Northwind, so it actually creates the actual connection string for you. And then what it asks you is, because the way actually security policy works in WSI 3 is, you've actually got to bind the security policy to the actual code that implements the services interface. So what it's asking us right now is, where does the actual order pizza service code actually exist? And I think it's in the order pizza class. And now if we click finish, a whole lot of magic goes on in the background. But the great news is, this isn't the kind of magic that tools within Visual Studio currently do.
You know what? I think that little dialogue where it's asking you to select a certificate kind of caused you to lose connection, because I'm not seeing anything beyond the endpoint service class.
Interesting.
Right before you clicked finish.
I still seem to be on.
Did your connection kind of disappear or something?
Ah, jeez.
You know what? We can go out of the sharing and come back into it. Maybe that will refresh it.
Yeah, you know what? There we go.
I got it back now. Cool. Okay.
Sorry, it's the laptop. For some reason, every hour or so, I lose connectivity.
For security reasons.
Yeah.
That's our security policy here at Microsoft, you know?
That's why people hate security guys, man.
Just checking.
So I'm sorry. So basically what happened, Ron said we actually dropped connectivity when we chose this certificate. At that point, it asked us a series of questions. What database are you using to store user IDs and password? It generated a connection string. And then what it did was actually ask us where WSI's security policy is. It's all good?
Yeah, yeah. And now show us what it generated.
Okay, so what it's done is, most importantly, let's take a look at WSI 3 security policy. For anybody that hasn't already taken a look at WSI 3, this is what the new security policy looks like. Very short, very to the point, and that's because they've got this idea of these standard bindings. So what the WSI has actually generated is a reference to this username over X509 certificate binding. So that's a standard way of saying, you know what, this policy uses username token and secures the message using X509 certificates.
Oh, okay.
Then there's a whole lot of attributes in here, such as encrypting the body. And that was basically, those were generated because we asked whether you wanted the actual body to be encrypted or not. Signature options were also signing the message to prevent against message alteration. So that's the policy. Then what you've done is, once you've usually created your policy, you then need to actually go and add a reference to the policy. the reference to the policy is what WYSI uses so that when the service actually receives a request, it knows it's then got to execute that policy. So the wizard's gone and automatically added that reference to you. So it's actually done in the form of a attribute, and you can actually see there that's the actual pattern. The pattern is direct trust with a username token. Then what we've done is some cooler stuff as well, which is this whole idea of, well, okay, so I mentioned that we're actually authenticating against a database. And in order to do that, we have to use one of the extensibility points within WYSI. And again, all of this is described in the pattern. But what we're doing is creating a custom username token manager. And what a custom username token manager does is actually allow you to actually access your own database or your own credential store, look up the ID and password, and essentially return a true or false as to whether the user's authenticated or not. Now, I also mentioned that we wanted to actually make sure that we're actually hashing the actual – We want to make sure that the password in the database is stored in a hashed format so that what we're doing right now is actually – this is how we actually look up the we take the actual password from the message and then we hash it so that then we can compare it to the value stored in the database, and at that point we'll know that the actual the password was either valid or invalid. And the way that we're actually doing that, we called a function, which is the hashing function. So again, this is that whole idea of how do we, and it's described within the pattern, but we want to be hashing the passwords that we store in the database. What's the best way to do that? So what we've done here is actually not just hashing, we're doing something called salting. So salting actually increases the, or decreases the probability that somebody could use a brute force attack and try to guess against passwords stored.
It kind of throws random junk into the cipher stream, right?
That's pretty much sort of possibly it. So, and there's actually two salting values we're using. One for the application, meaning that if somebody even had enough computing power to actually guess what hashing algorithm you were using and how the hash could be broken and so forth, it would only be valid for the passwords on that application. Then we've taken a step further and added a second salt, which is actually based on the particular user. So at that point, even if you manage to brute force, go through every word in the dictionary and every permutation of every salting value, you'd only be good for that particular user. You wouldn't guess any other person's passwords. Making it, you know, even with all of the computing power that the U.S. government has, you're still going to be pretty secure, I'm guessing. Fred would probably have more insight there.
That's another discussion altogether.
And you'd have to kill us afterwards, right?
Yeah.
But you can see there, so what we've done is actually taken advantage of custom extensibility point, implemented the hashing, generated the actual security policy, and bound the security policy to the web service. So now all you have to do is create your business logic. And that is obviously what we're doing right here.
Ah, okay. So that is really exciting because now we can see, we can take and apply this stuff directly in the code, kind of very easily using GAT, which I totally love that. We have about 7 minutes left.
Great.
Is there anything else you want to show us, or should we move on?
No, the only thing I should mention is that's a prototype, so it's not available right now. I'm sure there's probably questions being asked. But what we're looking for is input from customers. Is there something that would be valuable? Would it be useful? All that sort of good stuff.
Let me see. Yes. Okay.
Also, I guess, so probably what we're going to do is around November time, assuming we get substantial customer feedback, especially in our workspace, some discussions, tell us which patterns they're interested in, what other practices they'd like to see implemented. We'll kick off a formal project around getting these patterns into actually a formal project.
Okay, so then you're saying this project is kind of happen in two phases, right? Well, the first phase is get the doc done, and then the second phase is like implement some of these little wizards that you're just showing us.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
Okay, all right. So and this is just one of the areas that we're touching, right? And like this diagram here shows there's a lot of different patterns around service orientation. And we're just in that little circle security patterns today, but there's a whole bunch more that you're thinking of working on later this year, right?
Absolutely. Well, we're actually in a subset of that space of security patterns, because security patterns actually cover a large space, which is why we've got this large outside box, the enterprise architecture patterns, all of the patterns relevant to enterprise architecture, thousands of them possible. So really what we're trying to do is focus on those patterns specifically related to building service-oriented applications, which is why the first phase of this guidance is focused on security patterns for web services. later phases that we're considering. And all of this is based on customer data. So if anybody's got strong opinions or ideas, log on to our workspace, give us some ideas. But there's things like messaging and data consistency that we'd want to address, specifically the patterns related to service development so that we can actually release those at the same time as Indigo. Plus, some general service design patterns. So this is things like, how do I actually factor my web services? How do I think about versioning my web services? All that sort of good stuff. But the goal being that 18 months from now, we can compile all of these different sort of subdomains into a larger package of guidance, which are essentially your patterns of service orientation.
Excellent. Okay. So as we've been mentioning, this is a project we're working on. Care to guess, Jason, when it's going to be finished?
Well, as a PM, that's actually one of the things I'm not allowed to guess. What I have to do is my job counts on me actually having this available by November.
Oh, okay. Because if not, you're fired.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Okay. So
tough boss.
We're counting on it. We're counting on that being there. But like we said, we want your feedback as our customers because, hey, this is for you. And we hope that you'll give that to us on the workspace. So speaking of that, here's some places you can go. So there's a Visual Studio 2003 version in this at practices.net.com.
So that's right. So we've actually been doing, we did a June release, a July release, and we just released an August release. And that's basically the first half of the patterns. There's some additional patterns we're working on right now. So I would imagine over the next couple of weeks, we'll actually be releasing a couple of additional patterns probably every other week. The main focus for those patterns was WYSI 2.
Yeah.
So if you're actually using secure web services using WYSI 2 right now, the guidance is out there. Take a look. Give us feedback. But what we're in the middle of doing right now is revving it for WYSI 3. And I said November because around the same time that WIDBI and WYSI 3 goes live, we want to have our guidance go live as well.
Okay. So that's a good thing. All right. So definitely encourage you to go to the workspace there. Send your emails to Don or Jason if you want to. Their addresses are there. Hey, did you know we have a new thing here at Microsoft where we can finally get like a real email address? Yeah, you can get like your whole name. So like I got mine is going to be ron.jacobs now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You and because before our email addresses were restricted to 8 characters. I think that's because they ran the whole email system here on a DOS server. So they finally upgraded it, and now I think they're running 64-bit or something because you can have a whole big, long email name now. It's really great. Anyway.
Nice.
All right. So we have some other things. If you care about web services security, we did a webcast just a couple of weeks ago on the basic security profile reference implementation. You can listen to a recording of that. And you have one of the patterns I saw there was this SAML secure token service thing. So you're going to actually build it as an application block. That's kind of interesting. Fred, do you think about that?
The SAML STS application block is there are actually two parts to it. We will definitely build the patterns that describe the patterns, the SAML third-party issuer pattern as well. But in order for it to be useful, we've seen a lot of requirements from the customers where what they wanted is really some sort of single sign-on infrastructure services that supports web services. So we think that in order for the pattern to be useful, we really need to illustrate how that pattern could be implemented. And a little more on the pattern itself, that pattern actually uses a few of the security specifications that's out there. I've mentioned WS, security, conversation, and trust. As we all know, these security patterns are really composable blocks. So to the non-security experts, it actually is a huge challenge, a big challenge in terms of figuring out how you are actually going to compose these things in a way that's secure. So what we're trying to do in this application block is to come up with, I guess it's best described as kind of like a profile that ties together the different specifications and also put it together in a secure way so that you can have a basic framework that supports a SAML, an STS, a security token service that would issue SAML token for web single sign-on purposes, but also that you can use that SAML token to help secure the communications between the client and the service.
Okay, so we're out of time, but I want to thank you guys so much for joining me, and we'll see you next time on Patterns and Practices Live.
Ah, yes, memories. Memories of September 2005. Yeah, see, he was still talking about WYSIWYG 2 and stuff like that there, but we are done with that because we have WYSIWYG 3 now. The guide is shipping. And we have a lot more ArtCast coming. We're going to go through each of the scenarios, X509 certificates, Kerberos tokens, and username tokens. We're going to tell you how this all works, when you'd want to use one, when you wouldn't, because that's what we are about here at ArtCast, educating you with knowledge to help you succeed as you move forward. Well, what do you think? Write me a note to ron.jacobs@microsoft.com. Let me know, because this show is about you. It's ArtCast.